Thought Leadership Studio.
You're listening to Thought Leadership Studio, the podcast that helps you master high-level positive mass influence to create distinctive business niches, captivate an audience, grow your following, and change the game by changing the frame with strategic thought leadership.
Thought Leadership Studio.
Welcome back to Thought Leadership Studio. I'm your host, Chris McNeil, and this is episode 94, The Clear Path to Strategic Leadership Success with Mark Nitz. Building Stronger Leaders, How Virtues, Strategy, and Critical Thinking Drive Lasting Influence. What this episode will do for you is help you understand the foundations of leadership virtues by learning about the four key virtues of leadership: courage, wisdom, justice, and moderation, and why they're essential for effective leadership. To develop a better core belief in self, discovering how great leaders build confidence and put their team's success ahead of their own ego. To apply the clear strategy framework by exploring Mark Nitz's clear model, which focuses on core identity, landscape analysis, execution, agility, relationships, and risk management. Help you improve decision-making with critical information requirements by filtering out noise and focusing on the key insights that drive better leadership and strategy. To balance risk and innovation, understanding why taking calculated risk is crucial for innovation, and how leaders can manage uncertainty effectively. And finally, to apply these leadership lessons to strategic thought leadership by seeing how leadership principles extend beyond organizations to guiding audiences and shaping market perspectives. But before we dive in, let's take a little step back. If you're new here, welcome to Thought Leadership Studio. I'm Chris McNeil, developer of the Thought, that's THAUT, process of strategic thought leadership, and author of the upcoming book, Strategic Thought Leadership, coming this year. My gig is coaching and consulting individuals and organizations in strategic thought leadership. And this podcast exists to empower forward-thinking leaders like you to break free from outdated mental models and conventional marketing traps, like the ones that treat people as data points rather than engaged learners. The dominant marketing paradigm is still built on targeting, interruption, and manipulation, but real influence isn't chasing people down. It's leading them to fresh perspectives that empower them and make them want to return to your content and follow you. Strategic thought leadership shifts the game by focusing on guiding your audience to new ways of thinking that help them make better decisions, extract more value from your category, and maybe even upgrade your product or service to a previously unrecognized higher value. So it's not about just pushing content, it's about creating movements, reshaping beliefs, and amplifying impact in ways that traditional marketing can't touch. So that's why I started this podcast, and not just to explore these ideas, but to provide models of excellence, real-world examples of leaders who are shifting industries, challenging norms, and building true authority. And if today's conversation sparks something in you, and you're ready to elevate your influence and escape the old tired marketing playbook, I invite you to take the next steps of downloading the free Marketer's Guide to Strategic Thought Leadership, or schedule a free consultation with me to explore how strategic thought leadership can fold time and amplify your results. The links for these are on the episode page. If you're listening on an app, the link to the episode page is in the description. In this episode, I welcome back Mark Nitz, leadership expert, author, and founder of ClearSight Leadership and Strategy. Mark is known for his Clear Strategy framework, which helps organizations develop core identity, analyze competitive landscapes, improve execution, and build resilience. We discuss the four core virtues of leadership: courage, wisdom, justice, and moderation, and how leaders can develop a core belief in self to put their team's success ahead of their own ego. Mark also shares insights on critical information requirements, the importance of adaptability, and why risk-taking is essential for innovation. So without further ado, let's jump right into the interview.
Thought Leadership Studio.
So I'm your host of Thought Leadership Studio, Chris McNeil, and I am thrilled to host Mark Nitz again. Mark is a leadership expert, celebrated author, and founder of ClearSight Leadership and Strategy, known for pioneering leadership frameworks that emphasize virtues and strategic alignment. In our last conversation, which I'll link to in the episode page, which is linked in the episode description if you're on an app, we explored inspirational leadership. And today we'll dive into his three-book series, Essential Pathways Publications, including Strategy and Leadership, How to Achieve Both. Mark's work champions immutable principles, core values guiding resilient, high-performing teams, and his clear strategy framework provides actionable insights for navigating complexity. I'm super excited to explore how these timeless ideas can elevate leadership. Great to have you again, Mark.
Hey, good to see you, Chris, and looking forward to a good conversation.
Yeah, so we talked about a few things before we started recording. And maybe just before we dive more deeply into these subjects, including your books, Delegation Mastery, Critical Information Requirements, maybe you can catch up our listener who's not so familiar with your work. Some of them may not be. And give us a story about what got you to where you are now and doing what you're doing now.
Yeah. Having spent about 20 years in the corporate world, a little over 20 years in the corporate world, I actually came out of the Fortune 100 feeling like I had something to offer that really wasn't desired. and that was a lot of the impetus for digging deeper into some of what I learned, what was catalyzed by some of my time in the Army. And as an Army officer, I spent time as an officer candidate school TAC officer, which was a great learning experience. And a lot of that learning experience didn't really mesh or come together until I looked back on it. I enjoyed being a TAC officer, teaching people how to lead, teaching people what leadership entails. All that stuff was really intriguing, but I actually learned some really personal lessons after the fact. And my desire is to assure or to provide that connection with how it matters to you, how it matters to the listener, how it matters to their teams. That connection is very personal. It's very individual. And the hope is, and yes, hope, I know hope is not always a good word in business, but the hope is that individually people will start to really put themselves into leadership capacities. Go deeper than, we use this model for sales, or we use this for, how to build a skill, things like that. But it's core belief in self and understanding yourself, your person, what your strengths are, what you love, what you believe, and bringing that passion into the team to spark success.
Core belief in self. I love that description. What specifically do you mean by that? And how would you know the difference in someone who's developed the core belief in self versus a leader who has not?
So a lot of the challenge for followers with leaders who have not is overcoming that or being able to see that leader has not overcome the need to perform expectation, and that the leader places a high intensity expectation on both the leader performing and the team performing at a level of expectation that comes from other people. So to lay it out, it's a top down, you need to perform. That leader turns around and says, you need to perform. The followers say, why do we need to perform? And the leader says, just do it.
So without connecting it to things like these immutable principles or virtues that we've discussed.
Right. Yep. If you can lead with that belief, if you can sense the followership, so to speak, if you can sense your leader's expectations, and you know your strengths, you know why you're in that leadership position, things start to change. You also have to express that belief to your followers. It can't just be about money and numbers.
And we've talked a lot about the four virtues in the past. And since that's so central, why don't you describe what those are for the listener?
Yeah, the origin of those really is rooted deeply in Greek philosophy and, say, you know, several thousand years old. One of the connections here is the better leader is courageous, and courage being one of those virtues, is courageous in a way that the not yet better leader isn't. That better leader can turn around to their team and say, hey, this situation is challenging. I'm in this with you. Here's what I believe about your skills, your strengths, what I believe about you as people and your ability to place this achievement, to look for this success, and to work towards this success in a way that I will support you every step of the way. I believe in you. And if you actually believe that, your people will read it. They will see it. They will feel it. And they will follow.
That comes from courage. What about the other three?
Right. Yep. Oftentimes that leads to the value of wisdom. It is very easily demonstrated. The difference between wisdom and quote unquote smarts is very easily demonstrated in that leaders who are applying wisdom will look to their people first for the skills, for the strengths, for the capabilities, and they will ask questions. That leader often has been in positions where a plan doesn't work. They prepare their people for, hey, we've got this primary plan, then we've got an alternate, and then we've got a contingent plan, right? We've got two or three options here. And they ask their people, okay, when do we switch? How do we know that we're going to, you know, when we need to, hey, let's go with the alternate here because this isn't working. And they ask their people because their people know the skills, their people know the details, their people know how the structure works. They know the design. When you're a leader and you're a wise leader, you're a leader of people, not a leader of processes.
Ah, that's a useful distinction. Okay, so we've got courage and wisdom.
Mm-hmm. Justice pops up quite often in those situations because in current teams in their current state, often there are competing players on the team, and they're actually competing against one another. And that's in part because in the early 21st century, we've spent a lot of time setting up situations where to get ahead, you have to compete, you have to be better, you have to show that you're better. And there may be someone there that's ready to undermine what you're doing. And having experienced situations like that personally, I know it can be really devastating. And it's even more devastating if that's a situation that's actually set up by the leader. It's unfair when we come out of a situation thinking, oh, that's so unfair. The justice button has been hit. It's been pushed probably many, many times. and a wise leader who's willing to stand up and show that courage will step up and say, justice matters. Are the people on my team being treated fairly? It doesn't mean, are they being treated evenly? It means, are they being treated fairly? Am I treating them fairly? Do I assure that the right strength is employed at the right time? And do I communicate that with everybody? Here's why this strength matters. Here's why these skills matter to this success. And are we as a team focused on that success rather than being focused on me as a leader?
Yeah, we certainly don't want internal conflict within our organizations. A country that has a civil war is in no shape to go invade another.
Right.
So we got courage, wisdom, justice.
Yep. And so I think the kind of that final lead in is, hang on. I got to pause for just a moment here. Sorry about the interruption. So sorry. Because I've got these kind of all in Greek speak, and I'm confusing myself. Hang on just a moment. Okay. Yeah. So the application of moderation is one that is a skill, it's an ability, it's an awareness that I think not a lot of people give energy to. Mm-hmm. And the reason that self-control, that restraint matters is that as the leader of a team, when you're standing in front of them, when you're talking through the fair distribution of tasks, the skills that are necessary, things like that, when you're actually leading with courage, one of the things that you're doing one of the things that you need to focus on internally and part of your personal self-awareness is that self-control/restraint. And where and why that matters is that we are people of desire. You know, our humans have desires. That's one of the few elements of our existence that separates us from just about everything else. Your desire to accomplish something, your desire to achieve, actually needs to be set aside in those moments. Professional leaders are well versed at being able to say, okay, yeah, here's what I want, but these successes are what matter. That's my focus. That's my where my team focuses. That's really what's leading this team, is this success or this achievement. I need to set myself aside so that we can achieve this. And you do so in a way that the team's success really is what gets supported and really is what gets celebrated. Honestly, like there can be no there's no faking it till you make it when it comes to self-restraint in a team environment. You can't pretend. And it, that matters so much because that team must know that they really are who are being supported. It cannot look like, it cannot be reproachable. It cannot look like you're just saying that. You have to demonstrate it and you have to believe it.
That's part of setting your ego aside, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Favor of absolutely.
Higher purpose. And to give the listener some context, because I know this podcast is about strategic thought leadership. It's about online influence. But leadership is leadership. And the same lessons that apply in leading an organization in the marketplace or leading a team within an organization, they apply to someone practicing strategic thought leadership, perhaps with their team of people that support their thought leadership, or perhaps indefinitely in this case, actually leading an audience to embrace new models or new concepts or new perspectives that they're bringing to the marketplace. These things apply. And I'm glad you brought up that moderation part too, because that's the setting the ego aside is, I think, a distinguishing differentiator between what some call personal branding and strategic thought leadership.
Yes.
Personal branding is, to me, from what I've seen, it's more ego-based, where strategic thought leadership is more service-based.
Absolutely.
You're building a model outside of yourself that others can participate in, a creative project, and perhaps a team creative project. So in your estimation, Mark, and what you've seen and experienced, what percentage of companies are actually practicing these four virtues intentionally or not versus those that aren't?
Yeah, so I'll start with the statement, very few. I don't have precise statistics, but the percentage is probably in the 25 to 30 range. And that's giving a little bit of credit here and there. So very, very low percentage of companies that, and that's kind of across the board in terms of small, medium, large, but very small percentage that actually leverage this kind of deep personal awareness approach to, I'm the leader, what matters is the success of my team, and setting the expectation, communicating the expectation that really what matters, what the real leader here is the success, is the achievement. What do we need to achieve? That's what should be leading us. If my staff and my team aren't capable, that's on me. I need to figure out a way to train them. If my staff and my team don't want to, I need to figure out what inspires them and why they don't want to. What is it that they're reluctant about? Which means I need to ask all the right questions. And it can take some time to figure that out on your own. So there are ways, there are methods for developing those information requirements that those team leaders need in order to set up a structure where achievement is what's guiding us and leading us. I believe in my team. I believe in their strengths, their capabilities. I honestly want them to succeed, and their success is my success. So I am going to set myself aside and ensure that I put my effort into giving them what they need, you know, that appropriate distribution of expectation tasks. No one team member is more important than the other. Everybody understands their purpose because we communicate it every day, and we believe in what we are going to achieve and guiding it that route.
Something else I got out of what you're saying is the willingness to shoulder the responsibility of leadership.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yep.
Now, I think in the context of strategic thought leadership, it's putting your audience's needs ahead of your own.
It is. Absolutely. Yep.
And you mentioned the critical information requirements. That's something we touched on before we started recording, and making sure that people aren't suffering from information overload. And I know when you start working on an online influence, information overload is very tempting in that context as well, because there's so many
it is
vanity yep. metrics available
yes.
to us, designed to get those quick fixes. But tell us what do you mean by official information requirements, and how does it apply in this context too?
Yeah. Yep. And it is a good segue to critical information requirements are the list of words and phrases that you're listening for as a leader, both internally and externally, that will tell you more about what's going on. And that seems like a really broad general topic. Having that right list of information that you're listening for developed helps you screen out all of the, call it the noise, or all of the influencer topics that, where the words that are tossed in are intended to draw you in. But when they start talking, you're like, well, does this really apply? How do I, you know, and you listen anyway. How can you figure out fairly quickly whether or not that YouTube video is worth watching? Does it include critical information requirements that you and your team are looking for? And so to develop that list is really important. How do you know when you're talking to a client whether or not what you're producing is going to really help them? Mm-hmm. Is it really what they're looking for? Pushing through a sales model, that sales pitch model does not necessarily help. You're not going to convince them if there is no desire. And so you are listening. If you learn to listen very precisely, it's not about listening better. It's about listening very precisely. Is this person actually looking for what I can provide?
What would be a way of organizing around information that's helpful, and having what criteria would help you understand what's helpful and what's not?
Yeah. So a couple of good examples are the team looking for a fix for a problem? You don't know just because, well, my team's complaining, I'm gonna go fix that. If my team's complaining about something, are they complaining because there's an issue with the process? Are they complaining because there's an issue with the available skills? Are they complaining because there's a resource missing? Are they complaining because they feel like the expectations are something that are dropped on them and not necessarily, either in their wheelhouse or in their skill set? Why is it they're complaining? Oftentimes that's what we hear as leaders, are the complaints, right? So being able to dig into those complaints just a little bit more, asking questions like, okay, is this a resource problem? Do you have the tools, the technology that you need? If not, what is it that you need? That tells you as the leader how you can support them, which is, I'm going to go get this, right? I'm going to make sure they have what they need in order to succeed. Is it a misalignment of expectations? Oftentimes change management plans push expectations on teams that don't necessarily fit with the skill sets, or frankly, the professional and career expectations of the team members. And that's why you get a lot of resistance. How do I know that the team feels that way? And do I know which pieces they are resistant to? It could be that the overall idea sounds good, but there's someone who foresees a problem because the technology that they work with doesn't actually support that expectation. That piece of software, that platform, isn't built to handle what the organization says. Oh, we'd really like you to do this, right? Or you need to come in and do this. Well, it sounds like I could, but I can't, right? Because my technology doesn't support that. How do you deal with that? It's that those are places where you as the leader need to step in and have the courage to, hey, I'm going to step in here and make sure that either we adjust the plan or we, you know, bring in the right skills or we get the right software or all of the above, you know, something like that. You as the leader need to be able to step up and say, you're at organization leaders, you're asking for this. You think we can do it, but we actually can't. this is not what we do. And that takes courage. It's not, you know, you have to be able to say no at times.
Well, how do we get our information aligned with the customer so that we are helping the customer fulfill whatever they're pulling on the system of our organization for, and push out waste of internal friction of all the things that go on inside of companies that may not be meaningful to the customer?
Yep. A good example of what you're looking for is when you ask the customer, hey, do you have a product or something that you use consistently? You may believe your product is superior to the one that they're using. Are there, in that customer's industry, are there levels of expectation or are there value-driven results that they are willing to dig into the details? Asking questions like, are there gaps in the results when you use this product? Or are there flaws that you've noticed that you would like to fix? How would you fix them? What would make this product better? And whether it's something that you sell or something that someone else sells, knowing where the potential gaps are or knowing what you might be able to fix, put a little bit of energy into to grow that customer's relationship with you can matter a lot. Asking more questions, asking the right questions, can lead to a deeper relationship, which for the customer reduces risk and builds your reputation. So touches on that R piece of my clear strategy model. So just being able to dig into those sorts of detailed questions is often a better sales model than, oh, here's our pitch, you know, here's where we do the ask, and here's where we don't let the customer off the phone type stuff. That can actually be damaging because you're not really listening to why doesn't the customer want this.
Well, absolutely. And you know, to put this into context for our listeners, going to the customer side of the table, looking at our organizations from the outside in, because the customer is the one who sets the value in any service business in particular. So if we're not designing from the customer's point of view, there's going to be waste. And where thought leadership comes in, strategic thought leadership in particular, is when we find the answers to questions like, what is the purpose of this product or service in your life? What does it do for you? What's your intention with it? And find that because of outdated ways of perceiving our category, stale mental models, outdated belief, limiting belief systems, where people don't fully fulfill the values that they're trying to fulfill from a product or service, or they could connect a whole new value to it and elevate its use to a higher purpose that they don't yet see, enables us to do this kind of persuasion in a positive way to help customers get more value through the unique benefits of what we're providing.
Yes. Yep.
So, contextualizing that in strategic thought leadership. Now, you mentioned your CLEAR model. Why don't you tell the listener more about that?
So in the Essential Pathways book series, one of the things I dig into quite a bit in strategy in leadership is the application of a much more direct way of thinking about business strategy. And it is really important to understand terminology and what words, how to apply words. We hear the word strategic a lot. In fact, most often the word strategic is simply stuck in front of another word to make the word sound cool, pretty much. The idea of being strategic is, and I think your title, Strategic Thought Leadership, is brilliant because it is about thinking through you know, what and how might we be able to achieve something in the future. The value of strategy and leadership and what that book provides is a walkthrough of going beyond the why question in strategy. You know, why is our product better? Why does our company exist? Those are good questions to ask. How can you establish and communicate the core identity of the company that you want your staff to believe in? And so that core identity is the first piece. We don't necessarily always revisit that core identity consistently. We should. that's a critical function within core identity evaluation. What do you know about your market landscape? Do you do landscape analysis on a monthly basis? That landscape analysis tells us what's happening in our market, who's influencing the market. Something it digs into even deeper is if we launch a successful product or service, what happens to the market when we do? Are we paying attention to how the other competitors in the market respond to that? And if not, you got to dig deeper into your landscape analysis. There are ways to do it. Execution pathways. How efficient are your teams at executing? How efficient are they at being able to apply skills, apply teams to the right service, teams to the right product, people to the right client or customer? Agility in operations. Do your teams adapt? And it's not just, yeah, we, you know, every once in a while something changes and they shift with that. It is, do they adapt to a person being out for a week or a month? Do they adapt to how that market is changing? Are they paying attention to when they need to adapt? Do they foresee changes? How is technology and how are advancements in technology going to affect their product or their service? And say, hey, this might change what we do, right? That kind of adaptability tells you something about the maturity of the leadership and the maturity of the organization. And then the R in CLEAR actually has three parts. And that is your relationships. Are you genuine in your communication and your networking and your essentially business friendships? Do you develop those relationships? Do you look for opportunity for new and valuable relationships? All that is really important because that's what impacts your reputation. Not just your ability to produce a good product or provide a good service, but are you genuine in your human interaction? Because guess what? We can sense that. It's really important to know and to understand that we as humans can sense when somebody's not being genuine. So, and that impacts your reputation, which is the second R. your reputation is also impacted by things like, hey, if somebody's capabilities or skills or strengths or, you know, personal situation is impacting work and productivity, do you get rid of them? And what I mean by that is, do you fire them? Believe it or not, that'll impact your reputation in a negative way, because now you have to basically scramble to find someone to fill that gap, that role. That person does not like you very much, I guarantee it. They are not going to speak highly of you or your company. The people around you, the business people around you, will learn of this and know that staff are essentially dispensable. Now, if you ever watch Star Trek, you know about the expendable crew member, right? You don't want expendable crew members. If you take the time, plus it costs you a lot of money to fill a gap that fast.
Absolutely.
If you take the time to find an off ramp for that person, you know, maybe their strengths in their situation would be better suited for a different company for a different reason, et cetera, et cetera. That person is going to at least say nice things about you because you put some effort into believing in them and understanding their situation. There's probably a company out there that could use a person with that mindset. Great. That company is going to be grateful. And you, internally, people know, hey, if something isn't working out for me here, or if I really don't like this or what have you, I can actually say something and they'll help me, right? You've undone that culture of fear that I'm going to lose my job if I have to spend some time doing something that is, you know, for me, that I, you know, maybe I have a health issue or I have a family member, et cetera. You, that fear dissipates. And when that fear dissipates, you have a far stronger culture. So your reputation matters in all sorts of ways, and everything you do can impact your reputation, which leads to the risk piece. And one thing we need to learn, and that businesses still struggle with in this day and age, is the risk averse approach. And when we operate risk averse, we operate in fear. And everybody feels fear. It's a matter of what you do with it. Understanding that, hey, this might be risky, but we're going to evaluate whether or not we're willing to take that risk. And in some cases, say yes to taking on some risks, because if you aren't willing to accept some risk, you're never going to innovate. You can have all the ideas you want, but if you don't say, we're going to take on some risk here, we're going to try this, you're never going to innovate, and you're never going to be at the top level that you want to be. You also have to internally manage risk and assuring that you're not exposing your staff to too much risk. That's on the leaders, assuring that they're taking on enough without being too much. Also on the leaders, assuring that your staff is not being risk averse and completely avoiding it altogether. Also on the leaders, you have to communicate this stuff. So that's the CLEAR model, slightly longer explanation, but that's the CLEAR model.
Yeah, there's a lot to reflect on there, and a lot of resonates. I mean, just the agility piece, the biggest risk to an organization are not the competitors that are necessarily ahead of it at a given point, but the companies that are learning more quickly. Because if they're not learning as quickly as their competitors, whether that competitor's ahead of them now or not, they will pass them at some point.
Yes. Yep.
And, yep. You know, fate favors the bold.
Yes.
Risk. And the two things that create profits, according to Peter Drucker, are innovation and marketing. So when you can do innovation in marketing and your communication itself is innovative, you're combining both of those. So let's switch gears a little bit and talk about your books. Tell us about the Essential Pathways publications, and I'm going to link to all this in the episode page for those listening on the app. You can click the link in the description and learn more about them there.
The Essential Pathways series came out of a combination of my experience in the Fortune 100 with adaptability and the understanding of opportunity for business versus operational planning and planning out what you want to do and not being able to see that our operations can extend and increase value. And here are the opportunities to find that. And by not doing that in the Fortune 100, there were a lot of advantages missed. So the ability to, or the desire to step a little bit outside of the comfort zone and take on a little bit more of that risk just was not there. And I think for that reason, staying in the Fortune 100 became kind of challenging. A lot of that issue came down to really understanding strategy is something. Strategy is not what you want it to be necessarily. Strategy is something. And what strategy is about is opportunity and advantage. And understanding what those opportunities are and what we're looking for in an opportunity is absolutely critical, which is some of where that critical information requirements piece comes from. But absolutely critical to understand what are the opportunities we're looking for. Do we know when we can take advantage? Or not really take advantage, that may be a bad term, but when we might be able to establish an advantage.
Sure, absolutely. So what's a leadership Jedi? I'm looking at this title.
Yep.
Exploring Human Meaning and the Leadership Jedi. That's a cool way to put it. What makes someone a leadership Jedi versus none?
Sensing that, it actually segues nicely, and that is sensing that there are problems, having that almost sixth sense of the functions of teams, understanding your people well enough that you can tell, oh, they may not be quite 100% today. For individuals, for teams, also being able to sense that in discussions with customers, discussions with clients, is there something up? Is there something wrong? Going back to the virtues. Willingness to have the courage to say, hey, is there something wrong? Is there something I can help with? being human for a moment, actually being human all the time, but taking a moment. Oh, well, let's set business aside. Is everything all right? Because the person matters the most, right? And if you clue in, if you focus in on your own senses, your own abilities, it turns out that you do actually have that sixth sense that you can tell, oh, something's a little off. Or maybe this person is really high energy right now. And we can tap into that. Are you super excited about this opportunity? Okay, let's let this roll. That ability is part of that kind of Jedi leadership awareness. And some of that was catalyzed by my just genuine appreciation and love for the Star Wars series, especially the first three, really four, five, and six, but the first three movies, and that hero's journey that you learn a lot about yourself, you learn a lot about other people, then you apply what you know about yourself, etc. You come back, you can help.
Right. How do you know who's the hero in the journey? who learned the most in the original one, Skywalker or Darth Vader, who changed them?
Right. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep.
We're back into that whole change piece, that whole growth piece.
Mm-hmm.
How do we use the Force in business?
There is a very deep sense of self that is necessary, and honesty with one's self that is necessary, that takes time to develop. And having that sense for other people, where they are, you know, whether or not they're struggling, whether or not they're feeling amazing, requires that we understand ourselves the same way. And there's a tie-in to my philosophy background. Zen and the art of leadership, I think, is probably a term that someone else coined, but Zen and the art of leadership, we dig into, not even just dig in, we take the time to understand ourselves in the moment, ourselves in the day, and how we feel personally when we're up, when we're down, when we're energized, when we're not. Live in that understanding and essentially seek the signs in other people. And when we seek those signs in other people, and we've been honest with ourselves, we can ask the right questions to know when to help.
That's profound. So we usually wind these up in a couple of ways that you might recall, Mark. And the first question of the two types of questions is around, what would you recommend the listener do to further their leadership, thought leadership mm-hmm. specifically, but leadership in general, based on your experience that can only come from you, that they could take action on right away, top mm-hmm. three. Mm-hmm. And then the second part, if someone's listening to this and wants to reach out to you or get your books, how would they find you online?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. So if you are struggling with an underperforming team, if you are at a point in your career where you want to take things, I'll say take things to the next level, but really grow yourself as a leader, whether it's for a company, whether it's for a team, somehow, I really want to improve myself so I can improve my organization. Definitely reach out. There are, of the billions of people on the planet, there are billions of histories, billions of personal experiences. Your experience is unique to you. My experience with leadership development, and the capabilities that I can help pull out of you for other people to see is also unique, and helping you is what I do. Another key sign is, if you know, you can look back over your leadership history, you can see times where, you honestly, deep down inside, hey, I didn't do that right. Or I know that what I do is walk into the office and I start demanding things from people. Something in you tells you that's just not right. Like, that's not just. But I also don't know how to fix it. It's not something I'm going to fix on my own, right? If it's not something you're going to fix on your own, that maybe some help would be helpful. That's another clue, another key understanding. If that's happening, if you can honestly say, yeah, I could use some help with that, reach out. Email, phone call, LinkedIn, great place to find me. Amazon, you can search my name. The books should pop up. And Chris, I know you'll have a link too. but I'll provide LinkedIn contact info. That is one of the better ways to find me if you're interested in bettering yourself and bettering your teams to achieve, find the advantage in 2025.
And it sounds like part of what you're saying is things people can do on their own to further their leadership is to calibrate to those four virtues of courage, wisdom, justice, and moderation.
Yep.
Ask, am I in alignment with this, or am I not? Do I need to get more in alignment with this?
Yep.
Well, absolutely. Mark, this has been another great interview with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Thanks for the questions and keeping me on my toes and keeping me focused on those virtues and what really matters to our relationships with people.
Enjoyed it.
Thought Leadership Studio.
Thanks again for listening to Thought Leadership Studio. I'm your host, Chris McNeil, strategic thought leadership coach and consultant, creator of the thought process of strategic thought leadership, and author of the upcoming book, Strategic Thought Leadership. And this has been episode 94, The Clear Path to Strategic Leadership Success with Mark Nitz, where we explored key insights on leadership strategy, including the four core virtues of leadership, how leaders develop a core belief in self, and the importance of critical information requirements. Mark also shared his clear strategy framework, guiding us through core identity, landscape analysis, execution, agility, relationships, and risk management. If you'd like to dive even deeper into today's topics and you're listening on an app, visit the episode page at thoughtleadershipstudio.com. It's linked in the episode description. There you'll find a curated transcript, links to resources mentioned, including Mark's website and LinkedIn, and actionable insights from this conversation. While you're there, explore additional resources to elevate your influence into impact. Get the free guide, The Marketer's Guide to Strategic Thought Leadership, which you can get instantly, or schedule a free consultation with me, and let's just sit down over Zoom and discuss how the thought process can help you lead with clarity and purpose and discover what your greatest dreams would be that you could achieve better through strategic thought leadership. And finally, if you enjoyed the episode, I'd love for you to share it on your socials or send it to someone who would benefit from these insights. Don't forget to subscribe and leave a review. It helps us bring more content your way. See you next time. I'm signing off, Chris McNeil on Thought Leadership Studio.
Thought Leadership Studio.